wherever I'm living has an immediate impact on like the color palette and some of the forms in the painting and stuff. So being out here, I'm starting to see more like prairies and wind turbines. I was just driving up to Kansas to pick up a painting. Got to see like early morning prairie light and like wind turbines and these grasses and tall grass and stuff like that. So some of that mood has translated into the work. There's a slightly different palette to the newer stuff. I feel like it's definitely grows right out of the possible landscapes work, but just also thinking about making work a bit in conversation with what Sally's been doing as well, because I do think we really are kind of, I mean, we come at it in very different ways, but we're definitely both concerned with ecology and climate and even like science fiction speculative ways of thinking that, but translating that in a lens like that very much foregrounds craft and process.
Welcome to the Studio Break Podcast. I'm your host, David Linaway. For today's 303rd episode, I'm excited to be joined by Jason Rafferty, who I spoke with from Tulsa. He currently lives and works out there at the University of Tulsa. We talk all about his art practice, his studio practice, and break all of that down in the episode. His work incorporates a lot of elements of landscape and narrative, environmentalism, activism, through a variety of mixed media works that include traditional forms like painting and drawing, as well as book arts. So we break all that down in the episode. I would encourage you to check out his website, jasonrafferty.com, and of course, give him a follow on Instagram at jasonrafferty. We also spend some time talking about his two-person exhibition that opens Process Symbiosis at Studio Break Gallery with his partner, Sally C. Garner. Once again, that show opens here at Studio Break Gallery in West Chicago on April 20th. From 5 to 8 p.m. So please come on out and meet the artists, talk about their work in person. It's going to be a great show. If you want to find out how to get here, go to studiobreak.com and look under the gallery tab. We'll have information there. And of course, you'll see a list of available works through this show, as well as these podcasts with the artists. So we're excited to share that. Their work was selected as part of our 2023 Studio Break student competition by our juror last year, Mia Reisberg. So excited to bring the show together. We do have a current 2024 Studio Break student competition that's open. Our juror this year is artist and project coordinator at Purple Window Gallery in Chicago, Natalie Pavoni. So super excited to have her on board. She'll be selecting three undergraduate and three graduate students to appear on an upcoming episode of Studio Break and to share their work. She'll also be curating a two-person show from those entries. So very excited to have this opportunity to bring emerging artists here to Studio Break. So please check it out. You can go to that studiobreak.com, look under the competition page. There's all sorts of information there, but it's really simple. All you have to do is submit a small fee. You send an email with your information and you are done. And of course, if you could help spread the word, we'd love to get great applicants for some great emerging artists here at Studio Break Gallery in West Chicago. I do want to note that we have a big archive of episodes, so please check them out on studiobreak.com. You can find links to all sorts of website information, as well as images of work. You can also listen on Spotify, which is a great spot, or Apple, but it's a great studio companion, so please dip into those archive episodes. Lots of great stuff there. And of course, please follow us on social media. You can like our Facebook page. You can find us on Twitter X at studio_break. And of course, on Instagram is the best place at studio_break. And with those announcements out of the way, let's dive right into this episode with Jason Rafferty. Stay tuned. Welcome to Studio Break, Jason Rafferty. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, David. How are you?
I'm excellent. You know, we're excited to feature you. You know, again, it was kind of interesting how this all came together, but you were selected as one of the MFA competition winners by Mia Reisberg from last year. So excited to have you know, you on the podcast, but you'll also be showing with Sally Garner coming up in April. So super excited to talk to you about the work and to break all that down. And as we've been saying, you've got a lot of trajectory. So it'll be interesting to talk about that transition from, you know, starting from perceptual painting, working through various genres into what you're doing now, and kind of especially the relationship to climate activism, all that type of stuff. So long-winded, but thank you so much for doing this. Excited to have you here.
Oh, it's awesome to be on. I've been enjoying listening to some of the episodes, and it's always great conversations. So yeah, it's just thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And so start us off by just telling us a little bit about your background.
I grew up in New England. I was born in like Danbury, Connecticut, about an hour outside of New York City, and grew up there and in Massachusetts in the suburbs of Boston, about half and half growing up. And then I moved to North Carolina to go to undergrad, to kind of like go to a completely different part of the country. And so I moved to the South when I was 18. I've been kind of in the South in one way or another for my whole adult life, basically.
Well, and kind of growing up where you did, were you always kind of exposed to art? Was that something that was on your radar, or is it something that kind of slowly evolved through skateboarding and I don't know what else people do in in the Northeast, but you know, maybe not a lot of skateboarding, who knows, but
they were definitely doing it. I my skateboarding experience goes to Tony Hawk Pro Skater playing those games.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, growing up I was kind of going back and forth between like doing little drawings and doing like Photoshop back in the early 2000s when it was like you had to like, you know, find out tutorials and stuff online and internet forums and that kind of thing. And so I was going between like making signatures in gaming forums for people on forums and stuff when I was a teenager and just drawing and like just, you know, digital paintings, making little digital paintings and stuff for other people on web forums. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, not in a weird way, still like I look at some of that work now and I'm like, that's still kind of like informs my style in some weird way, like the grungy style or the abstract style. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. And I guess the other big one is that my dad would have art prints like around the house. He went to France for business. And so he had like a couple Monet prints that we just had around. And I still remember them, like just seeing them all the time. And, you know, when you're really young, you're like, what? You're looking at something, you're like, what is that? It's kind of abstract. What is that? Yeah.
Well, was there like a formal training in terms of like you went, you know, taking all your high school art classes, grade school art classes, just trying to soak up as much as you can then? Or is it something that you always kind of did maybe peripheral as fun, like you're talking about doing these digital drawings and whatnot?
I really was into it in school. Like it was my favorite subject. And I did AP art in high school. I'm proud to say I got like a 3 out of 5 on the exam, or what, which I might tell students always, it's like, doesn't matter, like the scores don't matter. Yeah. But I never did like private lessons or anything. I did that a little bit for music in the Boston area. Like, you know, music is a really big deal. And so I did that for guitar and drums,
okay,
like lessons.
Nice.
I was in band. But at a certain point, I was like, art. And so I loved, you know, doing it a lot in high school, particularly.
And was it something then too, then when you went to undergraduate, I definitely want to do fine art, or was it something more practical at first, like art education and, or who knows?
Yeah, I went to UNC Asheville, which is where Sally and I met. And that's a public liberal arts school. And I wanted to go there because I didn't want to just like, I didn't know if I was going to do art or writing. I was like, I'd read like the Beat Poets and was really into poetry and even did like hitchhiking for a little while. I was like, I'm going to be a beat poet. And I was like, I don't know about that. I don't know, maybe I'll be a musician because I had roommates who were musicians. But people kept looking at the art. And they were like, oh, that's like really good. But, you know, in my music, like it was more, became more of like casual, like, okay, I'll just do that to like, you know, have something to unwind or whatever. But I was just trying to listen to other folks about what they were saying. But I also early on, like had big influence from musicians. So like, I was looking at contemporary musicians first to like, be like, I love what they're doing musically. Folks like Bell Fleck and the Flecktones. Or like this Israeli jazz bassist, Avishai Cohen, and just being like, huh, like I really love what they're doing musically. How can I like translate that into like a visual art form? And then like, how do I get there with the visual art, you know?
Interesting. Yeah. Well, and then I'm assuming then you enjoyed all those early experiences in terms of like working, you know, from still lives and representationally? Because I know, again, as we talked already, you know, there's some time after, I think just, you know, finishing a studio arts degree that you kind of, you know, take all these workshops and whatnot. But were you somebody that was kind of propelled to kind of working from observation, kind of like learning the process and technical side of things?
Yeah, I really, just like going back to looking at those musicians, there's another one who came to our school, Daniel Bernard Romain, Haitian-American violinist, composer. And all these folks had in common, they're like, they're doing kind of really experimental music, but they're like kind of classically trained in some way to like have kind of the some chops. And so, and they're combining with like electronics and just weird stuff. And so I was like, I want to do weird stuff like that, but have like some, you know, some kind of training to fall back on. And I didn't even really have visual art references for that. I just had the music. And so I was like, wanted to dive into that. So studying anatomy and still life and representational painting and really soaking that in first. Yeah. And the kind of craft of making panels and stuff even is, it was huge. It's hugely important, you know, it's still like a big part of my foundation.
Yeah. And were there any kind of like early, I guess, art experiences that kind of maybe shaped you in terms of, I don't know, that time where you, you know, maybe catch your, you know, modern abstraction kind of like, oh my gosh, or, you know, was it something, you know, like a particular movement, artist, anything like that, that started kind of pulling you in a little bit in terms of thinking about maybe what art could do, I guess?
Early on, like, you know, that freshman college, like kind of period, freshman, sophomore, junior in college, it was definitely musicians first and foremost, like that I was like, oh, I'm going to do weird. Like I saw Return to Forever, Chick Corea's band in Boston with my dad, like when I was 17. And I went home and did like a crazy colorful colored pencil drawing that was abstract. And so in a weird way, you know how you might have referred to this, like you circle back, you like orbit around different styles and you come back. It was like, I kind of started doing really colorful, abstract colored pencil drawings in high school and stuff. And then was like, kind of rejected all that, be like, no, it's got to be representational and like earth tones and stuff. And then kind of came back in a way once it, you know, it was like you start just keep going further into the work. But it's, there were some, like, I was looking at a lot of figurative painting and like contemporary, like narrative paintings. And there were definitely some artists that were already starting to be like, get me into like, getting a little weird with it. Paul Fenniak or like Zoe Frank, like folks that like bring abstraction into narrative in interesting ways and sort of process based ways of working.
Well, and I noticed that too. There's, you know, definitely like a lot of figurative kind of portrait works in your background. Is that kind of like what you focused on then as an undergraduate? Or was it, again, a little bit more kind of more broadly kind of representational?
You know, I really like felt like I kind of was a figurative and landscape artist for like a good kind of period, kind of going between the two of them. But I studied at a place in Paris during that same time called Studio Escalier. And that was like all figurative kind of ways of working. And I did like anatomy classes at this little school called the Fine Arts League of the Carolinas in Asheville, where we did like all the bones and muscles and stuff. And so I really like wanted to center on the figure during that time and to, in order to like tell like whimsical narratives with it. Like it was always the kind of end goal was to like tell stories, you know?
Yeah. Well, how did you get involved with that? Was that through the University of North Carolina or something, or like a faculty member there that turned you on to this program in France?
The one in France, I just, it was through our little school in Asheville. I was like, did you guys know any programs there? And they're like, no. And I was studying French in high school and stuff. And my dad had gone there and growing up, he spoke it to me a bit. So I wanted to go to Paris, but I kind of found it on my own. And actually I sort of dropped out of undergrad for a while to do that. I like took a semester off to go over there. I just was feeling like, you know, when you're 20 and you just want everything right now. Like I was like, I want to focus on this right now.
Sure.
And so, you know, it probably wasn't like the wisest decision, but there was other factors at play. Like I was an out of state student and I was going to have to start like taking on loans and stuff. And their program there was actually, it was like pretty reasonably priced. And I was able to live somewhere like really inconveniently far outside the city and commute in and all this stuff. Anyway, also to say like, you know, I was cobbling things together and making lentils and like not going out at all. And like, you know, just kind of rough, you know, being a bohemian or whatever in a sense. But yeah, and was able to like get over there pretty cheaply and stuff. So, you
Sure,
know, you
sure.
scrap it together.
Well, did you, and you said you had previously visited then because your father had this association or you hadn't?
No, I'd never had. He would always go on like short kind of like business trips, just like when he was working in consulting and stuff like
Sure.
that. So I just always like he'd just come back with like a beret on or something. I was like,
Sure. Well, it's an interesting way to dive right in, you know, because I mean, again, I'm assuming there then you're there for big periods of time studying. Was there any difference in the type of approach that you'd have, or would you all just be kind of like working from life, going outside, painting, you know, portraits in the studio space or like a shared space, that kind of thing?
So the program I found was it's run by expat Americans. So important to say it was taught in English, and they get students like internationally there. But I was also like speaking French with the host family over there. So that was like a learning experience. Yeah, it was drawing from life for 3 hours a day, like 5 days a week, and then we'd go down to like the Louvre and like copy works and like not just like fully representational, but they have like a very robust conceptual system about the figure that is extremely important to me still, like talking about movement curves and block-ins and like ways that light fall on organic form and all this like wild stuff that Tim Stotts and Michelle Tully were teaching and still continue to teach. So like their concepts were super important, and I found at the Louvre I was really attracted to Peter Paul Rubens's Marie de Medici cycle, and so I would just go to that room like almost the entire 3 months that I was first there and just draw in there, because I was just like the theatricality of his stuff and his paint handling, just like I was like I didn't want anything else for a long time.
Super cool. Yeah. I mean, again, I could imagine that experience, you know, filled you up with lots of ideas, but especially it sounds like a lot of rigor too, in terms of, you know, just coming to it, that repetition. Did you find that like kind of coming back to, you know, it looks like again, you kind of, like you noted earlier, took a little bit of a maybe a break there to kind of focus on that. But I'm assuming then when you came back to kind of finish your degree, you felt like you had all these chops and, you know, this skill set to start really kind of exploring some of those narratives that you were talking about.
Yeah, so it took me a while to get back. Like, I was out of school for like 5.5 years or something like that, or like 6 years. But I was building an art business as well, just like taking any commission I could get, starting to teach classes and stuff, working in a painter's studio who was already more established and all that. But yeah, like I was like at a certain point I was like, you know what, I need to get my degree. So I went back and I felt like more prepared to focus on that series, which was ultimately called Mythic Images, and using like the BFA program at UNC Asheville, which requires a solo exhibit in a big gallery and like a undergraduate research paper, really like pretty rigorous, awesome program. But I felt like I could focus in more on doing what I wanted to do and like use the support structure of the school to help leverage, like to make that happen. And I was also by then an in-state student, so there's just all these factors at play. But yeah, it felt like the right time.
Remember, everybody, you can check out Jason's work at jasonrafferty.com. And then you can also follow him on Instagram, Jason Rafferty Art. But you can see lots of, you know, works that are current and then some of the works that we're, you know, maybe talking about if you want to go back into his portfolio and like the Mythic Images works, which I believe were kind of maybe inspired from some of those compositions that you were enjoying while you're over in France. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And like other weird influences, like the more that series went on, like Doctor Who and the shows we were watching, but it also started getting into like integrating concurrent events with that, like particularly like things influenced by climate change, which is another strain, but I have a background as a climate activist too. So it was like Baroque paintings in France, climate change and unclear narrative, like what's going on in these paintings, but it's fun to look at kind of narrative painting.
Sure. Are there any that we could highlight that maybe stand out to you that was like a significant one for you?
With that series, I felt like Persephone and Hermes in the underworld. So like a lot of these were like kind of like, Greek and Egyptian mythology, but like trying to make it current. I will say like I'm not that interested in, I just feel like I think about that differently now than I did then. Like I think for me that's it's like more so than what, oh, it was like Persephone and Hermes. Like I did research all these stories, but it's more about like taking friends who were artists and like asking them to like collaboratively come up with composition ideas. And like that one, my friend Marquana Burgess, they like came in and we just kind of like they got a costume and like you know we posed it with lighting and stuff, and I kind of like came up with a story after the fact. Like it was like, oh, like well, what could this be? And so just that idea of putting things together that exists already, and then trying to find a story out of it.
Well, it's interesting too, because like I think of the color palette being oddly enough something that I tie into your current work. There's all these like neutral kind of colors, but then also this vibrancy with it too. So like I think of, some of these backgrounds almost like as a Turner sky or something, where it can kind of have that kind of like chalky, ochery, kind of like color, for the interiors. So it's just kind of interesting. I mean, again, I'm sure that like part of it is that you've had your palette set for a long time, kind of having gone through that rigor. But the color is really interesting to me too, and I could see, connections there, or the way that you, use a lot of mark making, or kind of like leaving that physical kind of paint on the surface, you can kind of see in these paintings as well. So it's very interesting to start kind of drawing those connections for me.
Thanks. I feel like that's sort of a bridge piece. You can almost see one series emerging out of a former one, sometimes with like things like that. And the figures start to abstract and fragment, and the space starts to dissipate. And some people will say Turner, and some people will say it negatively, like, oh, Turner, like, but I do love Turner. Yeah. And so I'm like, that's I always love to hear it, I just feel like that was a fun one to start to fragment the figures more and stuff like that in particular.
Yeah. Well, again, it's interesting. Obviously, we were talking about evolution earlier. That word is like a dirty word to some people, maybe. I don't know. But I think we both have, are saying that we enjoy it just because, that trajectory is so kind of interesting. And, to kind of think about it in terms of a studio artist starting, graduate school during a pandemic, it seems like that was a pretty big shakeup, obviously, for everybody. It's weird to kind of look at it in hindsight for me, because maybe we have slightly different experiences of that scenario. I remember lots of graduate students trying to figure out how they were going to have MFA thesis exhibitions where, you're starting this process. And then remind us, again, you just graduated not too long ago from University of Georgia.
University of Georgia, Lamar Dodd School of Art.
And what was that like starting that process? You knew going in that you were going to be remote, or was it like 2019 when you started in that fall?
We applied in the fall of 2019, so we had no idea what we were in for.
Sure.
But it was really it was weird, okay? Like I showed up and the former, person who had my studio, like they still had a bunch of stuff that they had to leave there because they kind of had to scramble to get out, and like no problem. Like I follow their work now, and it's like kind of a fun coincidence that I was able to like, oh, like that's awesome. But we kind of got to this building that was, and the Dodd at University of Georgia is a big, beautiful art building, but it was basically almost closed off to undergrads, and the grad students were almost like some of the only people allowed in. And so it felt like you're just in this new place and you're just in this big building you have access to. No one else is around. And you're like, guess I'll do, whatever I want. You're like, I'll just, like take these project spaces over. And so it was very liberating in a way, but it was also felt kind of like, is anyone looking at anything that I'm doing? Or is it just like all kind of a conversation with like just your other cohort? But no, we felt really supported though at the same time. And then outside of that, there was like teaching, a big art appreciation class on Zoom, like 180 students,
Oh,
that
wow.
which I did as a TA. So, just like everyone else during that time, we were all balancing all these different things. But it was kind of uncanny. But it also, I felt like, gave me permission to take like complete pivot risks with the work that I might not have done if like everybody was just around and always looking at, when you're just like, I'm just gonna take some time when maybe less people are looking and just do some stuff,
Well, I would think too, just having, like, not to sound weird, but having the rigor to be drawing 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for giant chunks of time, I would think kind of hopefully sets you up for that kind of discipline. I say that because I don't know that I had the same thing if I didn't have the community, if that makes sense. Like I was used to being around people, so to kind of be a little bit more isolated, it strikes me as having some discipline to kind of work through that. But also, you know, it's very exciting to see it in terms of the work because, you know, one of the things that you'd mentioned earlier, you know, kind of working from, you know, portrait-based works, but also landscapes, as I see some of those, you know, in terms of the series that came, and I think you have it listed as experiments from home or something like that on the website. But you know, I start seeing like collage elements too that kind of start showing up with the work. So maybe tell us a little bit about what you were doing. Was it just kind of like an anything goes approach then, as you're kind of in this new environment and trying to figure out how to work through it?
Well, right before grad school, you know, I always like to bring in, because I share this with students a lot too. Like, I had this part-time job in addition to being an artist. I was an after-school counselor at like a STEM-oriented middle school, and that had a really big impact on like my work, because like I would just be making art with these kids, and like we had no money for art supplies, and so they just take random scraps out of the recycling bin and do stuff like, oh, I'm gonna make an airplane out of it. Because one kid was like, I want to be an aeronautical engineer. I'm like, you're like 11 years old, like that's amazing. And so just like, you know, paying attention to your surroundings, and if you find yourself, as artists we often do, like working some job that you'd rather not be at, it's like, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to actually like have a big impact on your studio work. And so I just felt like kind of being around a middle school environment with kids making pen drawings or marker drawing or crayon or cutting papers up, building things with blocks and stuff like that, that actually had a big impact. And so when I got to grad school, I got a bunch of like middle school type art supplies, like school art supplies, and just started making like wacky installations and little sculptures and things with them that were kind of deliberately like casual. I started looking into like casualism, provisional painting, like Sharon Butler and the abstract painters that were, you know, just working in ways that almost like antithetical to like my like rigorous rigor background, but they still have like a lot of craft in them. Also to say, like, you know, just looking around a sort of grab bag of influences, but you know, the lived experience, you know, being a big part of that, just like, you know, just how can I draw from the surroundings? And so that's kind of what went into that, you know, kind of work in the more fragmented and collaged approach.
Yeah, I think I remember reading somewhere about they're like trying to like look out the window to kind of like, you know, distill a landscape, or, you know, I know there was mention of a cat, you know, which also kind of crops up a number of times into the work.
That was pre us having a cat, but I grew up around cats, so I just kind of relate to cats. And my neighbor's cats would just like, we lived in an apartment building when I was doing experiments at home. That was still, we were still in Asheville, and neighbor's cats would just like wander into our like apartment sometimes and just like feel there, like, because I'm kind of a cat person. So
Sure, sure.
I would always just think it's funny, like, oh, here's another cat, you know. So the experiments at home was kind of like bridging between Asheville and Georgia a little bit. But
Sure.
yeah, it's, that was also like pandemic period. I think a lot of us were looking close to home for inspiration. So I tried to do like pair of paintings with like almost like postcard size like photos that I'll be printing out, and making the paintings kind of like very small, like almost postcard size, or maybe 16 by 16 inches, and like a lot of kind of smaller works, and then compiled into these sort of eclectic like wall installations that'd be like printed out CVS photos and paintings kind of leaned up against each other. And the other part of that was that Sally was going to school in Atlanta and I was going to school in Athens. So we lived halfway between Athens and Atlanta, and I did a lot of driving in the country out there. So the landscape in kind of rural Georgia was a big part of that series too. Yeah.
Just taking a quick coffee break to remind you to head on over to cedarbreak.com, check out some of our archived episodes. There's plenty to listen to while you work away in the studio. You can find out about our upcoming shows like Process Symbiosis, which, as you know, is coming up April 20th. You can also find out more about our Studio Break student competition that's coming up, deadline May 15th. Once again, cedarbreak.com under the competition page that's open to all undergraduate and graduate students. So go there and learn how to apply. We'd love to feature you as an emerging artist here at Studio Break. And with those announcements, let's dive right back into this interview with Jason Rafferty. It's interesting because, you know, as we were talking about earlier, there's just so much to check out on your site. Once again, jasonrafferty.com. You can go, you know, certainly take a deep dive into some of that. But to me, it's interesting because, like, you can see that kind of like shift then. and the way that it affects the next body of work, which is climate casual. And again, I start thinking of like some of those, you know, like those collage elements becoming more and more kind of like a part of things, or even just like, you know, the talking about kind of like working with quote unquote low art materials or something like that. There's lots of like more like, I don't know how I would describe it, like idea boards or kind of like pieces that kind of incorporate more text and kind of like an element that would be kind of maybe focusing a little bit more, I'm assuming, on climate ideas and activism. But maybe kind of talk a little about this transition. And I know, again, there's lots of transitions, but it's all very exciting to hear about. So
the climate casual, that was a series that more directly grew out of that being in the middle school experience, but also really folds into like, so I grew up, whenever I was a freshman in college, I joined a student climate activist group on campus called Active Students for Healthy Environment. And some of the folks who were in that group have gone on to like be like international climate policy people in DC. Or like, it's just like, you know, you're just like, wow, people I went to college with. Like, anyway, it's fun seeing where people end up. But we like went to, you know, DC and like did climate protests and everything back in 2009, 10, 11. But I was always like, but I want to be an artist. Like, I love activism, but I just need to be making things. And so that's kind of the background paired with being in a middle school and some of the like politics of school, particularly in the American South, like what can be taught, what can't be taught. That continues to be a thing that I've seen in the different states that we've lived in. But also the other big factor on that work was I found this text called Bad Environmentalism. It's written by Nicole Seymour. And she talks about irony and irreverence. I've written down a couple words here from the thesis, you know, but play and pleasure. So the idea that you can do climate activism in a way that's less serious, like, you know, she really harped on the fact that a lot of climate activism is really like serious and direct and solemn. And it comes out of like many of the people that do that are like upper middle class, straight white people. And so this has a very like, you know, oh, that, you know, we need to be. And so she was like, it can be much like there can be many different ways of doing climate activism. And you can have a more play and pleasure associated with that communication techniques. And so that was kind of like the underpinnings of like, I'm going to take school art supplies and do things like play on the idea of like motivational classroom posters, like, you know, we all know growing up. And and just do like ironic things with them, or like school announcement boards with like things pinned to them. And so I just had like, I like tongue in cheek, like faux posters about like a PTA meeting to solve the climate crisis. And it's like 15 minutes long. And then there's like a football game that like is like 3.5 hours long that like the timing there's a time conflict, you know, and just fun stuff like that. I just like the collage of ideas, the collage of experiences, you know, like, okay, middle school, politics of education, climate activism, and art, and like what happens in between, you know?
Yeah. And again, it's interesting to me because like, there's also something that I kind of notice, and maybe some of these kind of ones that you would maybe kind of directly link more to like landscapes, and maybe they have kind of even like, to me, somewhat like windmill type forms, but there's also like these kind of like cloudy textures, these like, I don't know, swirly kind of things that make me think of weather that obviously, like if we kind of jump into more kind of current work or kind of the work that kind of comes afterwards, it kind of, you know, to me kind of makes sense that we're kind of slowly distilling that side of things. And so when I think about like the idea that you want to kind of have that play, and especially thinking about your background, you know, and perceptual kind of things, it kind of makes sense to me that, again, it kind of keeps getting distilled into, you know, something that looks more, again, maybe like the possible landscapes, which is, I'm assuming then like all of the stuff from your kind of like thesis exhibition there in Georgia.
You do your research, Davis. That's awesome. Yeah. Just to like drop a little allusion back to my undergrad work, I was researching like neo-baroque a lot, and there's this concept in neo-baroque of folds, of like things folding back and into one another, and ideas folding into one another, and concepts like folding, and so I think a little bit of that, like with how all this is sort of like folded together into like the work right now, it's like there's like layers there, and they kind of fold into one another and in fun ways. So possible landscapes, comes from like the work and climate casual, this idea of this concept of a classroom as a theatrical stage upon which some kind of vague, uncertain cataclysm like takes place, which comes out of the experience of working out of middle school and like in the pandemic. And all of a sudden, I actually never saw any of the kids that I worked with like ever again after like March 8th or whatever, you know. It's like, have a good life, you know. So but in a climate metaphor, I don't want it to be apocalyptic, like just like a one note like we're all doomed, because I do follow the news on energy developments in particular, and there's a lot of like good things happening that most people don't know about. And so I try and be like, make imagery that is uplifting but also kind of grounded in chaos that we all kind of feel. And so there's a little bit of like, you know, this but also that with the work. There's like brighter colors, but there's also kind of a misty like space with like detritus flying around and wildfires and stuff.
Well, and there's different formats too for the viewer to kind of like see all of these in the space to kind of, I think, start to kind of piece together some of these ideas. You know, there's some that stick out to me as very direct in comparison to others, like Green Portal, which again kind of has like a, you know, a frame around it, but it also has like kind of like what you'd think about as like a classroom board with like chalk, you know, so you've got pieces like that. And then some of them, again, that kind of become, I don't know, these just really funky kind of landscapes. Is there like a particular work from this series that you kind of maybe would want to highlight, or some works that you think are kind of really interesting? There's like, looks like books as well. So you kind of have, you know, a lot of different approaches with this work.
The books is one I'll just speak to for a second. I took a book arts class at the University of Georgia, and it was like one of the most enlightening classes. I love making artist books, and I want to make more of them. And I just think making books, for me, was a good strategy for like almost like folding your questions into a book by putting images together that you don't know how they go together, you know, in your work. You're like, I have this abstract, fully abstract way of working. I have like this tongue-in-cheek narrative with like cartoonish figures. Like, how does this all go together? And so like make you know, a little book, and it's almost like a portable installation in a way. And so, and that was an opportunity to like bring in like digital painting and some of the like earlier stuff with Photoshop. So anyway, the book that I have up is Everyday Utopias. So that's definitely one that I had fun making. It has like scraps of wood as well, and bringing in the idea of like being resourceful, using, you know, things from the recycling bin, so to speak, or things that are just readily at hand, and cobbling together like a more utopian future. And I guess another one would be this piece called It Could All Very Well End Up Like This. And it's got these like little colorful fragments of monotype prints that are kind of just like lying around this cloudy atmospheric space. It has this like these cartoonish solar panel and wind turbines that are made out of like a number two pencil and paper. Just like, again, growing out of that experience of like, I'm in a school classroom, we're just using whatever's around, but like, how do we make sort of like these utopian characters, they're these aspirational, you know, wishful characters, and but they're like being blown out of this weird white structure, and it's kind of like in the atmosphere. And I like to research like energy, you know, to new green energy technologies, and so I was just thinking about like speculations of like how we might modify the atmosphere, like by putting stuff in it to like block the sun, all these like weird things you can read about like in science, that are people basically speculating about ways to use technology to resolve the climate crisis. So like, I don't know, it's like, it's that the viewer doesn't have to get that, they can just be like, what the hell's going on? But like, that's sort of like a little bit about what like led to the imagery in that one. So I don't know.
Yeah, and something that we haven't highlighted much, and I feel bad, but we've just got so much work to kind of talk about, is the process. I mean, are you like journaling ideas, or are you kind of doing a lot of sketching? Are you working like digitally? Take us through like maybe the process of a painting like this.
Collaging monotypes and kind of like torching the edges, which I feel like is one of the things that I've just been excited about, and collaging pastel drawings and torching the edges. You know, that kind of just happened accidentally. My father-in-law was showing me his wood torching, and he was doing a deck or whatever, and I was like, I got to get one of those. I just one day tore off an old drawing that was mounted to a panel to try and reuse it, and it just had these fragments that were left. And so I just had it in the studio for like 4 months, and then one day I just decided to torch it, like torch the edges, and I was like, wow, that's fun. Working in a mixed media way, that one's actually all acrylic as well, and so like trying to make acrylics do things that like I was only able to do in oils, and I will do a lot of digital sketches or hand drawings. So the figures, like the cartoon characters, they started as a pencil sketch, and then I did them as cartoon characters in Adobe Illustrator, like vector illustrations, and digital collage them into with some other stuff in Photoshop, and did some digital like digital painting stuff, and then use that as sort of the as a plan to make the physical painting. But you know, it would be a translation. Things would shift when you go to make the painting, like the colors would get more dialed in and all that kind of stuff. But it's kind of going back and forth between digital and analog.
Yeah, and I would imagine too, you've got like a bunch of these that you're kind of working on. So sometimes maybe they start informing each other, or are you somebody that like turns everything around and it faces the wall? You only work on one thing at a time, or?
I think like the bigger ones in that show did happen kind of one after another in sequence, and so there was an opportunity to think about them almost as like sequential narratives in a way, or how they ended up looking. I think it's almost like different camera angles on the same scenario, but like one's down in the landscape looking up to the sky, another one's like in the sky in the middle of the chaos looking down, and so they're like different views. And so like there's just little things where characters from one will reappear in the next, but they're like much smaller and in the distance and that kind of thing. Like there's these figures flying on a school book in the middle of the sky, and they appear in an exceedingly likely scenario, this landscape, they appear kind of really small and in the distance, but then they're kind of more in the foreground in a future more hopeful than a few weeks before. So, but also say I don't really turn things around so much. I like to kind of have them to look at and be like, okay, well, I don't want to do that just again.
Sure,
But
sure.
how can I, make it relate?
Yeah, well, super fun. And, obviously, I guess now it makes sense to kind of talk a little bit about some of the stuff that's coming up. As we kind of talked about earlier, you're going to be showing in Duty Break Gallery with Sally. So again, pretty fun. I'm assuming, and I know we'll talk a little bit about this, but the show is Process Symbiosis. Again, that's at Studio Break Gallery, April 20th, 5 to 8 p.m. You can come out and see a lot of these paintings that we're talking about, a lot of these ideas that we're kind of trying to break down a little bit today. But one of the paintings that I notice in that pile that's also been sent with updated works that we're going to be showing is Nature Catalysis. There's this really kind of interesting kind of radial design to it. Everything's kind of like swirling and emanating out of it, like this almost like a portal form, which is also something that's kind of referred to in some of the other pieces. What would you say is kind of like shifted since you kind of left that experience? And I think you're now in what, Oklahoma as a, did you wind up then kind of getting a job then out there at the University of Tulsa?
Yeah, I got a job as an applied assistant professor of 2D visual art.
Awesome. And so you've been working out there and teaching and, making all sorts of work, but how did that move kind of affect the things in terms of what was going on in the studio in Georgia?
I mean, the first big thing I think is that, being somebody I've loved landscape painting and landscapes for a long time, like wherever I'm living has an immediate impact on like the color palette and some of the forms in the painting and stuff. So being out here, I'm starting to see more like prairies and wind turbines. I was just driving up to Kansas to pick up a painting. Got to see like early morning prairie light and like wind turbines and these grasses and tall grass and stuff like that. So some of that mood has translated into the work. There's a slightly different palette to the newer stuff. And but a lot of it I am trying to so also not do a hard break. I think I love the how the work's been going. And so, it's just like keep it going, like keep those constraints a little bit tighter. And let's just like sort of see how the plant grows, so to speak. So I feel like it's definitely grows right out of the possible landscapes work. But just also thinking about making work a bit in conversation with what Sally's been doing as well, because I do think we really are kind of, I mean, we come at it in very different ways, but we're definitely both concerned with ecology and climate and even like science fiction speculative ways of thinking, that but translating that in a lens like that very much foregrounds craft and process.
And I'm assuming then there's lots of conversations about this. Are you pretty open with each other then too, in terms of like sharing work and process and kind of giving feedback to each other and that?
Absolutely. Yeah. We are always talking about stuff that we have going on in the studio. Usually we talk about our questions with each other. Oh, I don't know how this is going. You know, we're very
sure.
open with each other about like the anxieties of the creative process. And we all know how it feels like midway through, you're really like, this sucks. What am I doing?
Sure, sure.
Well, but no, we really try and build each other up as well and be like, oh, what if you tried this, and give each other suggestions, be generative, you know?
Well, it's interesting because obviously, you know, we're talking about works that are much more sculptural, interactive, installation-based works. And obviously there's an element to some of the stuff that you've done, but it seems like the current stuff is much more, you know, works on you know, canvas, you know, kind of more traditional approach. But one of the things that I kind of think that's interesting about that conversation are going to be the differences. You know, like I notice like these weird little like cracks or layering that make me think of like the Earth's crust in some of your pieces. And we start seeing this layering, and I feel like there's going to be, you know, different ways that some of those thematic ideas are explored with Sally's work. And, you know, to kind of, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first time you've shown together, right?
Yeah, in like a full-on, like, you know, two-person show. We did show like in a group show here in Tulsa pretty recently and a few other times. But yeah, we're excited because it can feel more like, you know, a conversation, you know, that really is a bit more deliberate in a two-person exhibit, I think.
And it's interesting because like even the palette, there's some kind of similarities, but obviously with your move, there is also some, you know, kind of like really kind of fun, you know, color intensities that kind of get thrown into these, you know, these landscapes, if you will, right? I mean, again, super vibrant colors. So, you know, again, the range of those kind of seem to kind of grow and, you know, expand. So again, it's exciting to think again about how all these things evolve, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the idea of a portal is still sticking in my brain, you know? And so the portal transition, the works I think that are going to be shown in your space are generally a bit more abstracted, maybe a little bit less narrative, in part to like go with some of Sally's work. Like I've been thinking about her structures and her weavings and basket sculptures that she'll be talking more about. And so, but this idea of like a process of becoming, of things unfolding, of feeling uncertain about the future, I think that we all do, particularly in terms of climate and energy, but also, you know, the idea that working in tandem with nature as opposed to trying to control it, like there is real possibilities there. And so, I mean, the forms might be a little bit more on the abstract side as opposed to like the full-on narrative with cartoon characters for this particular iteration, but it's still sort of like, I feel like there's that implied context, that idea of possibilities and things evolving and speculation in a sort of a science kind of inspired way, you know? Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. So again, super excited. I know, again, I feel like we scratched the surface because I know that you're also, you know, putting together exhibitions and all sorts of other things. So, you know, just as a reminder, tell everybody where to go to stay up to date with all your things that are going on in your studio practice.
My website, Jason Rafferty, that's RAFFERTY.com, and Jason Rafferty Art on the Instagram. And you can find me at the University of Tulsa's Art Department, School of Art Design and Art History website as well. And yeah, just and out there, you know, showing around and such as well. So I have a show upcoming at the Sazong Institute for Contemporary Art in South Korea over the summer. Yeah, I have a piece in a show there and a few other opportunities as well here in Tulsa coming up at Mayfest Invitational Gallery in May. And I'll be up at Pouch Cove in Newfoundland, Canada for a residency in May too. So
awesome.
Excited for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, well, I really appreciate, you know, you taking the time. I'm so excited to again, bring your work here to Studio Brick Gallery in West Chicago. So looking forward to the exhibition with Sally. And again, just thank you so much for your time this morning. It's been great.
Thank you so much, David, and Oliver, who I know is in the background there. It's
yeah.
been a really fun chat. It's love your podcast and It's just, it is so fun to listen to while working in the studio or driving in the car to go pick
Sure.
up some work from an exhibit. You feel like you're in the studio. It's vicarious studio, so it's good
Sure.
stuff.
Thanks once again to Jason for joining me. Please come check out his two-person exhibition with Sally C. Gardner at Studio Break Gallery. Process Symbiosis opens Saturday, April 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. It should be a great old time with the artists. Super excited to host them here as well. So please come on out, hang out, meet the artists, see the great work. And of course, you can find a full gallery of information and available works at studiobreak.com. Just look under the gallery tab and you can peruse works that are available there. We will have that episode with Sally featured on the podcast as well. And of course, I would just note, you can find more information about Jason. Check out his website, jasonrafferty.com. Be sure to follow him on Instagram. And especially if you enjoyed today's episode, give him a shout out at Jason Rafferty. As we announced earlier, it is time for our 2024 Studio Break student competition. So if you're a student artist out there and want to share your work on Studio Break, please apply today. It's really easy. You submit a small fee, you email all of your information, and you are done. Once again, that's open to all currently enrolled and recently graduated within the last year, undergraduate and graduate student artists. You appear on the podcast, and our juror this year, Natalie Pavoni, who's an artist and project coordinator at Purple Window Gallery, which features a lot of great contemporary art shows, will be selecting two artists for an upcoming two-person exhibition at Studio Break Gallery here in West Chicago. So once again, please get those apps in, and of course, please help spread the word. It's a great way to earn karma points, and we love showcasing emerging artists, so get those apps in today. Music for today's episode is by Golden Shadow, which features myself, Ben Cohan, and Brett Beery. You can follow us on Instagram at Golden Shadow Band. And of course, you can find our EP on Bandcamp, so please check that out. It's linked right in our link tree. If you want to see some of Ben's paintings, it's M Ben Cohan Studio on Instagram. And of course, Brett Beery on Instagram, where you can find a link to his Bandcamp and label, Typical Stereo Records. We're excited that they recently put out a new EP from The Decals, which features Ben and Brett in another project. And actually, one of my old paintings was chosen to be the displayed artwork for that, so super excited for that. Really great EP called Sound Engine, and there's other EPs and albums available on Bandcamp, so check that out. If you want to see some of my paintings, davidlinaway.com. It's all integrated into the same website, so super easy to check out some artwork there, and there's a lot of stuff still available. Please give a follow on Facebook, Twitter X, and especially Instagram is the best place, at David Linaway. We are, of course, in social media, so be sure to like our Facebook page. You can find us on Twitter X at Studio Break, and of course, on Instagram, it's studio_break. That's the best place to go to stay in touch social media-wise and say hello, so please give us a shout-out if you would like. And of course, hope that you take a deep dive into the archive episodes on Spotify or Apple. It's a great studio companion, so please check them out. As we wrap, I just hope that your studio practice is crushing it, that you're getting all sorts of stuff done, staying positive, and just getting in there. Hope that you enjoyed today's episode and that we see you on April 20th for Process Symbiosis. We'll talk to you real soon.